Looking for something smart, soulful, and full of heart? I'm Jen Hatmaker, host of For the Love, the podcast where we talk about what really matters, love and family, faith and purpose. Every week, I'm joined by incredible guests for honest conversations that invite all of us to live with more intention, more laughter, and more connection. Join us on For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
Radio you can touch. Go ahead, touch it.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
I don't want old ladies fawning over me right now. There was a day where there's a couple girls here.
Girls? They're 90.
No, I'm talking about 40 years ago if somebody would have called.
No, they were 92.
No, there's a couple girls here kind of interested in you. I would have been, you know, when I hear the words, some old ladies really kind of into you, Bob.
Ew.
Jeff Lutz.
You got to be living your best life. I want to be me. I can do whatever I want. Thank you.
You're a genius.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Strap yourself in and feel the G's.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Monday edition, the Bob and Jeff Show here on KFH Radio. As we start a new week, Bob Lutz, Jeff Lutz with you as your co-host, Max Power. Produces, engineers the show, 869-1240. That's the number to call, the IHOP hotline. Let's start with Duda having just an unbelievably good week of picks.
Is that what happened?
You had a good week, too. I had a so-so week. Anthony had a good... Everybody had a decent week, but Duda just blew the field apart.
Well, I hate to hear that. What'd he do, 8-0?
He got 6-2, but he got his bonus game. And a total of 40 points.
Goodness gracious.
Went zooming by me. Remember, I'd gotten to within 1 point. Now I'm down 24.
I don't know what to tell you.
You got within 2 points of me with a good week, 32 points. Getting your bonus game right.
I hate that Duda and I think the same on the bonus game. We never have a difference of opinion on the bonus game, which is a big problem.
It was a close game. I mean, bonus-wise, it was very close. Could have gone either way.
Yeah, but
it wasn't a 10-point. You just got lucky.
No, but as I told you,
you guys
on Friday, I was 100% sure. I rarely have that feeling.
Well,
where
how'd you feel about that when Texas had the ball and a chance to win it?
Well, they would have won by 3, and Georgia would have covered.
How'd you feel about it in regulation?
Fine.
Really?
Yeah.
Good.
Felt great about
it. Glad to hear it.
And I got 10 points out of it. How many did you get?
I lost, let's see here, I lost 5.
Interesting.
I didn't go crazy on it.
Yeah,
but I lost 5. Not happy about it.
Well, I'm sorry for you, but again, that one just felt pretty right to me from the get-go. And it paid off.
I watched a bunch of that game. I watched a bunch of Penn State, Oregon. I watched a bunch of SMU, Clemson. And I watched quite a bit of Iowa State, Arizona State. Boy, Arizona State. Don't sleep on that club.
Who do they have, Notre Dame?
Well, I have to look.
No, they have a bye.
When you pop that on me, you can't expect me to know.
They have a bye, but I don't think they play Notre Dame in the second round, do they? I don't know. I should have memorized the bracket.
You should know.
No, now I'm going to take that back.
Because you sound uneducated and ill-informed.
Yeah, I don't care.
When you don't know things.
Do you know?
No, I never said I did.
You're uneducated and ill-informed.
I can't remember, but I never said I did.
Uneducated.
On that, I am. I watched.
We're going to throw ad hominem attacks around.
I watched the selection show yesterday, but I can't remember.
I didn't watch a second of college football this weekend, but I did watch a lot of basketball. So there is that.
You know, you're trying
to. I'm so over college football. I just don't
really
care. I just don't care that SMU gets to play another game. I just don't care that Clemson is still around. I just don't care.
That's where you are.
Absolutely.
Indiana, Notre Dame, these are all the weekend of the 20th and 21st. That's the Friday night game. And then you've got SMU, Penn State, Clemson, Texas, Tennessee, Ohio State. I'll watch most of that.
I'm glad for you. If you get entertainment.
Well, I'm a Heisman voter, so that's what I do. I watch.
Isn't the Heisman vote?
Yeah, I got voted yesterday.
Already do?
I voted yesterday.
And?
Nothing. You don't need to know anything.
You don't want to tell us who you voted for?
I'm not one of those people.
You're not telling me. You're telling our listeners. So you're doing a disservice to our audience when you neglect to inform them.
I'm not one of those people.
One of what people?
That spill my guts on who I vote for.
I don't care about your guts.
It's my business.
I don't care about your guts.
It's only my business.
Don't care about your guts. You can,
what do you think of
you
that?
You can either tell us or not.
I'm not telling you.
There. It's not some big confession.
Oh, you'll try to pull it out of me.
We're not pulling the...
You're curious?
No, I don't care.
I won't even tell you off the air.
Okay. You voted for Genty, and that's obvious, so I know you...
You don't have a clue who I voted
for. Yeah, I just told you who you voted for. It's easy to figure you out.
Well, that's not who I voted for.
You're lying to me.
No, I'm not.
I don't believe you.
Well, I don't care what you believe.
You're all about the story and, oh, this guy, Boise State. I know you.
Well, I didn't vote for him.
Who'd you vote for, then?
I'm not telling you.
Yeah, exactly. So the
one
only
that's off the radar.
Really? Why?
Well, because I think he's a great player.
There's only two candidates for the award.
Well, what if I voted for Devin Neal of Kansas?
Then you wasted your vote.
What if I think he's the best player?
I guess. If they really believe that, I go for it. Seems like a little bit of a territorial type pick, a little homerish, some would argue.
It has a little bit of that to it, but listen, I thought the guy was fantastic.
Well, for a team that finished 5-7, I think the best player would carry you a little farther than
that.
We'll
see how many votes he gets.
He won't be a finalist.
Well, I didn't say he would be. And nor did I ever really admit that I voted for him. I said, what if I did?
Well, I know who you voted for.
And what if I did?
That's your vote.
If I did, I'm proud of it. Whoever I vote for, I can make a case for.
And who was that person?
What if it's Devin Neal? Juan Soto to the Mets. 15 years, $765 million. I was thinking about this. You know, we get up in arms. I kind of got up in arms on a Facebook post calling it insane. But it's only insane to those of us who can't relate. It's not insane to Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets.
Of course not.
Who has all the money in the world.
Could buy another guy for just that amount of money.
The more billionaires we have in this country, the more you're going to see things like this. This is a good time to be a professional athlete.
Especially in a sport with no salary cap.
Right. But you're going to see these billionaire owners. They got more money than they even... I mean, it's ridiculous how much money they have. And for him to spend $765 million of the $50 billion he owns or has or is worth,
it's a drop in the bucket.
15 years means nothing to him.
No, it's nothing. It is nothing.
Forget that it's $315,000 per game. We can't wrap our heads around that. That number is completely impossible to comprehend.
No, we'll never see any kind of money like that. Even you.
Per game.
I understand.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
He could play 10 games over the next 15 years, this is speaking to the numbers, not really a possibility, but a hypothetical, 10 games over the next 15 years and be set for life. 90 innings.
He could play zero games, and he's already guaranteed the money. So
10 games, he could potentially have, 40 at-bats and be set for life.
If the contract worked that way, yes.
Now the question becomes, do these athletes, we don't know how Juan Soto is, what he thinks or how he's made. We certainly think that he'll continue to aspire to be one of the greats to ever play, and at least one of the great hitters to ever play. That would be our guess. But what if Juan Soto, now who's set for his life and 50 other lives, what if he turns it down a notch?
I don't know. I wouldn't expect that to happen.
You wouldn't expect
no
it
one
to
else
happen,
has ever done that.
You also have never gotten $765 million dumped.
You know
on.
How you know how you get to be that good at a sport? You're as competitive as it could possibly
right.
get.
And I'm not saying
and he's
he
not
going to
give
that
up.
That. But I'm just saying, what if someday an athlete will come along, sign this kind of contract for this amount of money, and whether they acknowledge it or not, the work ethic could suffer.
I don't know. I'm sure that has already happened.
If I got $765 million and I continue to do this, if I got that to do this radio show, you think I'd continue to do the A-plus job I do now?
Well, the good thing is no one would notice if you...
Why do you feel the need to drag me down?
Why do you feel the need to drag yourself up? If you're going to do that, I'm going to bring you right back
down.
Why?
Why do you feel the need to drag me back down?
Why shouldn't I?
If you feel like I'm dragging myself up.
I'm not here to stroke your ego, friend.
I don't want my ego stroked.
So I'm not going to say, oh, I don't know, your A-plus job. Keep doing your... No, I'm not going to ever do that. So if you tout, I will detout.
There comes a point where money is an incentive, no question about it. If Tony Dusing, our program director, were to come to me and said, I want to give you an extra $50 a show, I'm going to answer the bell. I'm going to do my very best to be worth that. If Tony Dusing comes to me and said, Bob, I want you to sign a contract for 15 years, I'd be 84 at the end of the contract. That's irrelevant. For 15 years... at $1 million per.
Why are you using yourself as an example? I don't get that. You're not even.
I'm the only one I can use as.
But you're not dealing in the same territory. We know it's a lot of money. There's no real perspective you can put on it that's going to make people understand if they already don't.
I'm just saying, if you're Juan Soto right now, wouldn't you feel the slightest nudge to say, man, I got this money no matter what. Am I going to go to the gym 5 days a week? And I mean, you know what I'm saying?
What else is he going to do? Go eat McDonald's?
Well, I don't know.
He's one of the best athletes in the world.
I'm not saying he's not going to do it.
Well, I just don't understand this hypothetical that is never going to happen.
Can't you pay somebody too much money to where they lose their incentive?
Probably.
That's all I'm asking. That's all.
I guess. I don't know how to necessarily respond to that. Anything's possible.
An athlete like Juan Soto is driven to perform, first and foremost, but also to maximize his earning capability. That's no longer an impetus for him. That's taken out of the equation. He doesn't sit at home at night and go, man, I want to be the best so I can make this, you know, make.
Well, now he wants to be the best for other reasons.
Maybe.
Probably. I mean, we've never seen an example where a guy just
quits.
But
isn't there a doubt in your mind?
No, there isn't. He wants to win. He wants to be great. No, he's going to quit on his team.
I'm not saying quit on his team. I'm saying
that's quitting on your team. Is baseball a team sport?
What does he care if the Mets fans turn on him?
I don't know where you're going with this.
At some point, you have enough money to not care.
Like, well, I mean, we could just make up anything.
Is $785 million.
No, that's not how much he got.
$51 million a year, plus he's got a 5-year opt-out that if he doesn't take the opt-out, the Mets then owe him another $40 million. So the contract could be for $805 million.
I don't know. Did Steve Cohen quit or did he continue to generate wealth and income and net worth? I just don't understand the hypothetical.
It's a good hypothetical.
No, it's not. I mean, you could make up anything. What if?
It's a great question to ponder.
There's no question.
I pondered it on the drive home from Wellington this morning. And if I had a decent co-host who wasn't just looking to mock and diminish everything I said,
well, it just doesn't make any
then
sense.
Then we could have a decent discussion about it. But I got a co-host who's threatened.
Threatened?
Because he doesn't have a thought.
Why would I be threatened?
So my thoughts get minimized.
No, it's just a dumb thought is all.
That's what I mean.
It just makes no sense. What am I supposed to say?
Have a conversation about
it. I thought we were.
No, you're just throwing.
Yeah, that's never happened before. Why is Juan Soto going to be the guy?
What do you mean it's
why
never
is Juan
happened?
Soto going?
How do you know it's never
why
happened?
Why is Juan Soto going to decide? Hey, I'm going to be the guy.
Do you don't think I could go back and? What about Albert Pujols?
What about Albert Pujols?
Did Albert Pujols knock it down a notch or two when he signed the big contract?
You'd have to ask him.
Did he perform the same?
No, but he got older.
31.
He got older.
Did he have the same numbers?
No, but he got older.
I think you can look at others of the major contracts.
Who got older and their performance. Yeah, you can look at everybody who's ever played sports that way. That's what happens. Why is Juan Soto going to decide, hey, I'm going to be the guy who ruins this for everybody else. So the next guy who is up for this much money.
I'm not saying he's going to ruin it for everybody. I'm saying there could be a subtle, okay, part of my motivation to be great.
So what does that look like to you?
Was to make money. Just a subtle
difference. Is he going to now swing at a pitch out of the strike zone?
No, just a subtle difference.
So what does that look like?
The way these guys work to get where they are. They have to work unbelievably hard.
So you never take this to the conclusion.
So maybe he just doesn't work quite as hard.
You never take it to its conclusion, though. That's where your arguments fall apart.
Go ahead. My arguments fall apart. So I don't think my argument falls apart. I think it's a good argument. I just can't make it without being...
Take it to its conclusion. What does it look like?
I just said that.
That's not a conclusion.
It looks like a person who doesn't maybe quite work as hard
as
he
did. And what does that look like in numbers?
The numbers start to fall off slightly.
What does it look like? I just don't know how you perform that way. How is he going to perform less than?
I don't know,
makes
Jeff.
No sense.
I'll take it all back. I'm wrong.
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
Good. I'm nonsensical.
You're not telling me what.
Good. I'm not telling you. I got to do better next time.
Well, you're making
I will. I'll work on it.
One-dimensional argument.
I'm going to work on it.
Whatever.
I'm going to try to do better next time. I obviously didn't make my case today. I'll make sure that I put a little more thought into these things the next time I bring something up. Max, let's take a break. We'll come back and talk. We got a good show for you today. Jeff Geldner, formerly of the KU Television Network, now a Jayhawk insider. We'll get his thoughts on KU dropping a couple, including to rival Missouri yesterday in Columbia at 2:45. Kip Pulliam, the head girls basketball coach at Wichita Heights, will join us. And Paul Mills, Wichita State men's basketball coach, we'll be on the show at 3:25. Stay with us.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays, and now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
Here's Jeff Geldner, our KU insider, former Jayhawk, member of the 1988 National Championship team. Jeff, we normally call you in here during the good times and sometimes the bad times. First of all, welcome. Thank you for being on.
Thank you. I'm actually on my way to IHOP after listening to that commercial. It made me a little bit hungry, but I'll try to pay attention.
There you go. Well, get that decadent French toast, my friend.
Uh-huh.
So let's talk about KU now. Dropped a couple after a very fast start. Got to number one in the country. They haven't looked the same in the past couple of games. What I see is a team trying to find its chemistry. What do you see?
Yeah, I think that's a fair way of putting it. Maybe a little bit overly simplistic because you've got new guys that are trying to figure out how to assimilate themselves to roles. You know, you've got Storrs and Griffin and Mayo and even Coit that are used to being the man on a team and being able to play 25, 30 minutes and play through their mistakes. And now they're having to, you know, pick it up a little bit faster, and they're not being allowed to do that. And that's a challenge. But with Bill Self at the helm, I think that they'll figure it out. But absolutely, when things aren't going well for your core group, you need other people to pick up the piece. Or pieces, and this past week that did not happen.
How much of a formula for having success against KU did Creighton kind of give us? It wasn't necessarily the same against Missouri. Dickinson had some big shots, but he still didn't take over the game like he's able to. Is kind of focusing on him and letting others quote unquote try to beat you, is that a formula that can work against KU, or ultimately do you think they'll figure that out and adjust?
Well, yeah, I do think they'll figure it out. Can it work? Yes, I believe it worked a lot last year. You saw, especially when McCullough was out injured, but even when he was playing. You know, the fact of the matter is, you can say what you want, but Juan and KJ are great players. They're great Jayhawks. But what they aren't are great. They're not great shooters. And you have to start, when you go into a game, you game plan about who you're going to play, what you're going to try to take away. And sometimes that is letting the team have some things. And they're letting KJ shoot. They're letting Juan shoot, which means they're not out pressuring them, which means they're more in the lane and clogging things up in the lane. And so the way to make that, you know, or to beat that is to have guys make shots. You play faster, you know, get stops, obviously, get out on the fast break, and try to get easier baskets. And then, you know, I think Bill Self mentioned it a little bit in his presser with Missouri, is they've got to figure out ways in their rotation that they're going to play when KJ and Juan are not at their best. They have to figure out their rotations, because if you're going to have those two guys on the court with Hunter, there's a lot of clogging up in the lane, and a lot of attention can be paid to the shooters, and that makes it tough for them. But ultimately, making shots is a great remedy to things.
Former KU guard Jeff Geltner is with us, a member again of the 1988 National Championship team. KU coming off back-to-back losses to Creighton and Missouri. Two more non-conference tests before the Big 12 season arrives. So Bill Self doesn't seem like the kind of guy that laments things. But we have now NIL, transfer portal, which, you know, led to him bringing in quite a few guys out of the transfer portal to join some of the veterans that are still with Kansas. We've seen other coaches throughout college sports say, okay, I don't think I can do this anymore. Where do you think Bill Self is on this?
I think right now he looks at college basketball as sort of it's kind of in flux. Whereas the you know, the Virginia coach, I just drew a complete blank on, and some others have said, you know, this girl, Tony Bennett, this
Tony
just
Bennett.
Really isn't for me. Yeah, I think Bill, you know, it's one thing if you're Bill Self and you're essentially at the top of that pyramid. Yeah, Duke is up there, and there are some others. But in general, he's able to replenish his roster as easily as anybody does. But I don't think he sees this as being the long-term vision, if you will, of college basketball. There's got to be some regulations. There's got to, whether it's the NCAA or some other governing body, has to get control of this, because it's just asinine what kids are getting paid, what these schools and donors are having to put up to get a player. And then we'll see what college basketball, college football looks like when the dust settles. But when you're, when you have a personality like Bill Self does and a memory like Bill Self does and a desire to win and that hunger to compete, you're going to be not only be competitive, but you're going to be successful at whatever the rules are. And then you learn to adapt, just like you learn to adapt coaching styles to, you know, the game, and how heavily the 3-point shot is weighted right now is a big example of that.
Yeah, to take it a step farther, how do you feel like Bill Self feels about coaching a team like this where it is a lot of transfer portal guys? He never was a big one-and-done guy as far as high school recruits. That never seemed to be the focal point of his recruiting. So now that he does have a bunch of guys that are kind of probably one-year players, does that detract from his coaching ability at all?
I think so. I think it makes it, it shows how important it is. But if you look, you know, he brought back three key starters, which is kind of normal for a Bill Self team. You know, if they would have had El Marco Jackson and Jamari back, that would have been, you know, another. And then Zach Clemens, who was a returning player. In years ago, you know, many years ago, he would have brought in a freshman class that would have competed for minutes. Well, now instead of bringing in that freshman class and relying on them, you're bringing in transfers, and these are proven transfers that were Ryland Griffin started on a Final Four team. You know, AJ Storrs, you know, all Big Ten. David Coit, I mean, 20 plus game scorer. They're proven players. You just have to. The challenge is to get them to fit together as a team. Obviously, you've got to defend if you're going to play for Bill Self, but it's different in that you're bringing in older guys, but you're still bringing in new guys and having to, instead of just teaching them how to play, you're also having to break down the mental of how they used to play and get them to learn how you want to play. So there's kind of an added step there.
Jeff Geldner with us. We're talking KU basketball. They play North Carolina State at Allen Fieldhouse coming up on Saturday. Let's talk specifically about Hunter Dickinson. 15 points per game, 9.6 rebounds, shooting almost 55% from the field. Those are close to All-American numbers. This guy is one of the best players in the country. Have KU fans completely embraced him? Is there a love affair with Hunter Dickinson that he can do no wrong? And I'm judging this based on the worst possible source, and that's Twitter. Because you read almost anything there, but what's your thought on that?
Well, I think that in some ways he's taken for granted. It's not easy averaging 20 and 10, and he can get 20, 25 points very easily. He's not overly athletic. There are things that he's not great at in terms of foot speed and rim protection for a 7'2" guy. But he does things so effortlessly on the offensive end, but I do think a little bit he's taken for granted. I do think that he's not necessarily, and I'm going to try to phrase this the right way, the typical KU player, in that he's very demonstrative with his hand gestures and telling somebody they're too little, or kind of draws attention to himself and makes himself the villain. Kind of like a Christian Laettner used to do at Duke. And the Jayhawks or KU fans are not used to seeing that. And there's no doubt that the opposing fans cannot stand him. But I think the love affair or lack thereof with the Jayhawk fans is all going to be about production and how this team does.
Well, yeah. Answered.
So they have about 3 weeks until Big 12 play starts, but they only have two games between now and then. So outside of, you know, winning those games, what should they be looking to accomplish? And obviously finals and things will kind of get in the way of the 3 weeks of practice. But what should they be looking to accomplish over the next three weeks? What will tell you that this team is ready for jumping into the Big 12?
Well, the one thing that you can't assimilate is being on the road and all the adversity and the crowd being against you and things not going your way. And we saw that this past week. So it doesn't matter how much work they put in the gym and how confident they are. Nothing's going to prepare them for going on the road. But that being said, they're going to get an opportunity to be in the gym and to figure out different ways, different schemes to be able to play different rotations based on who's playing well and who's not. I mean, it's very difficult to play Juan and KJ and Hunter all 30-plus minutes a game together unless they're playing really, really well or you've got other guys that are stepping up. And right now it's clear that Bill Self's not thrilled with what he's getting specifically from Ryland Griffin and AJ Storr. So hopefully there's a breakthrough, if you will, as far as figuring out what he wants, and that comes on the practice floor. And hopefully these two games will be a way for them to kind of see that and see it work to where they can build on it and get ready for conference play.
Final moments here with Jeff Geldner, part of our KU Insider. So we thought going into the season that the Big 12 was just going to be incredible. And it's been good, but it hasn't been incredible yet. Do you think it can get to that level? Can the Big 12 be the knockdown, drag out, every game's a buzzer beater type of conference we kind of thought it would be?
Well, I think so. I think that if you look across the country, I mean, UConn goes to Maui and loses three games. You know, Duke has lost multiple games. You know, that's just when you're bringing in new guys and trying to get them to play, and then you take them, especially on a hostile environment, it's difficult to win. And, you know, Bill Self always says the league's a monster, and it is. But he also used that to reference the SEC. And, I mean, when there's 57 teams in a conference, it's bound determined to have some good ones in there. And then you just never know how teams are going to come together and how quickly they're going to come together. But when you just look at top to bottom, the quality of the Big 12, there just is no easy game. That's what I think really makes it tough. It's not so much top heavy like the ACC of the old days. It's a deep conference, and going on the road and winning is tough.
Jeff, we do appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show. We'll get with you after the first of the year, after Big 12 play starts, okay?
Sounds great. I appreciate it, guys. Have a great holiday season.
All right, Jeff Geldner with us. Played on that 88 Jayhawk National Championship team and follows that program very closely. Kip Pulliam, he is the girls' basketball coach at Wichita Heights. Kip, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Well, we're doing okay. We're happy to have you on. It's very early in the season, just one game under your belts, not a competitive game, a big easy win over North, but we know you're highly thought of in the state this year, I think ranked in the top three in Class 6A. What are you expecting? How good a team is this? How good a team can it be?
It's going to be a really good team, and I think they're a good team now. It's a team that I think, as long as we keep developing, and you know, last year was my first year back, and I got to put in my system and kind of doing the things that I've always done and changing it a little, and then now it's year two of it. They understand it. We're getting off to a quicker start of developing more into the system. And, you know, I think they've got a chance by the end of the year of, you know, making a really deep run.
Yeah, you got to the state tournament last year. Obviously, Heights has had a lot of success over the years, so not that that was surprising or anything, but how much did that experience help your team, especially now you got a lot of people back, a lot of your key people back? What does it mean to them, for them, to have had that experience?
I think it's going to mean a lot. You could tell last year when we went, and of course we had to face Washburn Rule in the first round, who had been in the state finals game the last 2 years and won it 2 years before that. You know, they had been there and done it, and this group of girls has not. You know, that was their first time going in a while, and so it was a great experience. We gave Washburn Rule, you know, all they wanted, and, you know, that team lost last year to Washburn Rule twice, who played in the 6A finals, and to Topeka Seaman, who won 5A. So they, you know, and all them games were very competitive, and, you know, 5-6 point games. So they've kind of seen it now, and now I think they're hungry to, you know, make the next step and, you know, try and go win a state championship.
Talking with Kip Pulliam, he is the girls basketball coach at Wichita Heights. You've got two players that most people know about in Ellis and Jackson. What's the supporting cast like for them? How much of a supporting cast do they really need, because they're both really exceptional players?
Yes, Samaya and Kennedy are both great players. They kind of, you know, feed off each other, and they've tried to learn. And actually, we've got Kamira Barber, who is got hurt in our third game last year. She was a starter until she got hurt and was out the rest of the year with a knee injury. She's back, and she's playing really good. And then we have Zari Walker, and we have Heaven Gilbert, that are both really good role players. They know their role. They do their role. They do a great job, and they help us a lot. And then we have some really good, you know, bench players. We got Anaya Harris and Destiny Mays. We have some really good players, Hallie Clemens. We have some really good players that come off the bench that, you know, they get a battle all week with those girls, and we get to make each other better, and then they get a chance, you know, to help, you know, play their role on the team, because it'll be their team in a year when all these seniors are gone.
Yeah, so last year was your first year back, of course, after a very successful tenure previously, and you go undefeated in the City League. How much did that feel like you'd done it before, like the previous time around when you really dominated? And what felt different maybe about last year coming back?
Well, last year felt a lot different, actually. It was just, you know, since I'd been out for, you know, 6 years, and I hadn't, you know, had the chance to coach, and I'd just done training, you know, so being with a different group of girls and starting, you know, almost from scratch, because, you know, in the years past, everybody kind of was in the system and they knew it, and it was kind of, you know, as they grew up and got older, I got to plug and play them into the system. And this was a group of girls I had to teach from the very, you know, all from the very start, and to try and do it in 1 year and, you know, get to the standards that, you know, I've always wanted to be in as a state champion. You know, I thought we had a great year. We got to the state tournament, and in year one, I thought that was great, and I thought the City League going undefeated was great. So it was a little different feeling than when, you know, it kind of was happening year after year, and I'd just come back.
Kip Pulliam with us from Wichita Heights. What is who are your big challengers in the City League this year, Kip? Who do you have to really pay attention to?
I think there's going to be a good group of them. I think Bishop Carroll and Capen will be both really good. I think Wichita Southeast, Wichita South, and even East have got really good young players and good older players to mix in. So I think there's going to be a better group, you know, towards that middle and top that can help, you know, give us, you know, challenge us and going to make us come out and play every night to win those games. And we've got a little stretch here for the next three games of South, Southeast, and East that I think will be really good battles for us.
And how important is it in your mind to have that some balance in the league? Because I go way back, as you do. I remember when the City League was not only winning state championships, but putting multiple teams in state tournaments. How important is it to try to get back to those times?
It's really important, because when you don't, you know, when you don't have any competition, or, you know, you're winning your games by a lot and your girls aren't getting to play as much, it doesn't help you when you do get into those tight games. I mean, you know, you can kind of go look back at Derby football this year. You know, they were beating everybody really bad and they never really got challenged. And then, you know, you get into a tough game, you never know how your kids are going to react. So I really like it. I think we've got a getting more and more parity in the upper half, so there are going to be some competitive games, which I think you need, and then you're going to test your team and see where you're at, and that way you can, you know, make the changes you need to make and actually, you know, make them full game ready, which, you know, sometimes doesn't happen.
So one of the things you did while you were away was work a lot with Perry Ellis. How's he doing? How much communication do you still have with him? What is he kind of looking to do, I guess, maybe in his career coming up? I know he's been in Japan.
Yeah, he's in Japan right now. We were texting last night. He's having a great season. He's with a team out of, you know, I can't even remember, the Blowwinds is their name, but he's had multiple 27 plus games recently. I think he just said he had 18 and 10 on the game Sunday. Of course, they're a day behind us, so he is always done before, and the timing's off, so I don't really ever get to watch many of them or see them. But he's having a great year. I think he'd like to play a few more years professionally, and then I know he's talked to me about possibly coming and coaching with me or doing something like that when he's done. So
awesome. Kip Pulliam, our guest. Now, I'm going to ask you, I know I've asked you about this before. Your father, Stan, probably provided me with my very earliest memories of basketball, going to Derby High School games when I was just a small child, and he was part of a team that included Bob Gifford and the Gaskin brothers and Jim Hoffman and a bunch of guys that you probably know about, but not many do.
Yeah.
What do you remember about your dad, if anything? I know you don't remember those days, but as a basketball player, I know you remember him very well as a coach. What about as a basketball player? Do you have any memories of him playing?
Yeah, I actually remember when I was, that 8, 9, 10, 11-year age that I thought I was getting really good at basketball. And, even that 12, 13 where, I'd go out there and he'd want to play horse or I'd want to play horse and shoot with him and he could still shoot his lights out. So I always knew he could shoot it really well. And he was, as a coach, he really pushed me, and I'm glad he did because, he made me the player that I was and the coach I am today. But I do remember that he was, the days I remember of him playing, he could really shoot it. And I do remember going and watching him play in the over 50 league in Derby play, and he'd play with some of those old guys in that league. And I remember going and watching him, so it was kind of fun.
Yeah, I hearken back to those days quite often. Those were magical times for me, and your dad was a part of that. Kip, I really appreciate your time. We'll catch up with you as the season the ongoing season. Okay.
I appreciate you getting hold of me this early in the season. If you guys ever need me, I'll be happy to come on. I enjoy listening to you guys every day.
It's not that we need you, Kip. It's that we want you.
Okay, well, good.
Even better.
Thank you, Kip. We'll talk soon.
Okay.
Kip Pulliam, the head girls basketball coach at Wichita Heights. All right, I'm kind of off on the clock today. I've been off on the clock today. I don't know how that happened. Makes me nervous, antsy.
Don't be nervous.
I don't know what to talk about. There's a lot to talk about. The Chiefs with another way to win, banging in a field goal off the upright. There's a book to be written about this season and how many different ways you can win close games. I've never seen anything like it.
They seem to have found just about all of them.
You know what doesn't get talked about enough? That may be wrong. It gets talked about a lot. But the improvisational skills of Patrick Mahomes to get them in these positions. Did you see that little scamper and then the pass to Kelce for the big first down?
On the third and seven?
Yeah.
I didn't see it live, but yeah.
He's just so good at making things like that happen. You feel like the Chargers are after him the whole game. This Chiefs offensive line is an issue. And then their left tackle gets hurt, and they have to bring in the guy that got replaced. What's his name?
The Humphreys was the new guy.
Yeah.
I know.
Wanye Morris. And they bring him back in just for a couple plays. But Mahomes is basically running for his life the whole game and somehow found a way to make it work. And they beat the Chargers. They don't beat them bad. They barely squeak by. They don't cover.
They never cover.
They're now, 12-1?
That's correct. Division champs.
It's just incredible. And tomorrow we'll have Vahe Gregorian from the Kansas City Star on, and he'll be able to put it in more flowery terms than I am. So we look forward to that. We'll take a break. An hour to go on the Bob and Jeff Show. Stay with us.
Hey, hey! What time is it, kids?
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Bob Lutz.
When it's radio, it's just those words are gone. Everything we do here, it's in a vacuum.
Jeff Lutz.
I have something against most older people's ideas. They just don't have any. We're at the top of pretty much everything. And here are boomers. Hey, I got my house and my social security, and I'm good.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Your visit is always discreet.
Stand by for action.
Welcome back. It is hour number two, the Bob and Jeff Show here on KFH Radio. We've got Wichita State head basketball coach Paul Mills coming up at 325. Shockers played very well in beating East Tennessee State on Saturday evening at Coke Arena. They have only one loss in the season. That one loss was a blowout loss, however, to nationally ranked Florida. So I'm curious to talk to Coach Mills to see what he thinks. They have a very interesting game coming up in their next one on the road in Chicago to face DePaul, which looks to be a team that's made a remarkable turnaround.
Have they beaten anybody
yet? We don't really know that yet, but we know that they only won three games all of last year, and they didn't play anybody any better. So whether they're for real or not, I don't know. But they're better than they have been, and they have a proven coach.
Yeah, we saw Missouri yesterday, a team that won like five games last year. They'd lost every game in the SEC at 0-18, and they beat Kansas. So these turnarounds can happen, A, when you have the right coach, and B, in the current environment of college basketball. So if DePaul has those boxes checked, then it might be a difficult game.
You can make the case that DePaul had its first true, real big test, although they'd beaten Duquesne out of the Atlantic 10. They'd beaten Eastern and Northern Illinois out of the MAC. But they had their big, big tests that happened over the weekend in Lubbock against Texas Tech. They lost that game by 14. So they weren't blown out, but they were down only one at halftime in that game. And that's a tough place to play. And Texas Tech is having a pretty good year. So I suspect DePaul will be a challenge for the Shockers. Not an insurmountable one, but a challenge.
I guess that's the evidence that we have so far, that DePaul will be a challenge.
Well, the guy coaching DePaul,
Chris Holtman.
Yeah, he's a good coach. He's got a good track record.
Yeah, he took Ohio State down a peg, though.
Well, look, they didn't take them down the pegs. They're down now. Who beat them just recently by a million?
I don't know.
You used to follow this stuff. You really did.
I did?
I feel like your interest in sports is waning. But maybe not.
My interest in Ohio State's non-conference basketball schedule, I would argue I never had much. So if
yeah,
I have
but I just, you know,
none
I,
now.
Why do I know this stuff? They lost to Maryland 83-59. And Maryland was up 40 in that game at one point. They've played three difficult games. Well, is Rutgers any good? I don't probably think so.
They have two of the best freshmen in the country.
Yeah, but they're 5-4, and I doubt that they're that good yet.
Not yet.
Freshmen in this day and age doesn't mean much.
Well, when you have two top three or four picks, you should hopefully be able to develop them into something by the end of the year.
Well, we'll see. But freshmen, well, they got some good freshmen. That used to be a big deal in college sports. Not so much
anymore.
Those
are still the guys that are getting drafted early. You have your foreigners and you have your freshmen. Those are a lot of the times.
You're telling me Rutgers has a couple guys that are going to get drafted?
Not just drafted. They'll be in the top five probably.
And Rutgers has those guys.
Yeah. Correct.
And they're 5-4.
I don't think anyone expected a whole lot from them just because I don't know if the supporting cast around them is good. They lost.
Well, if you got two guys that are in the top five of the draft, shouldn't you be pretty good?
Well, you would think, but maybe
who
it's
who are they?
Bailey and Harper, I believe.
You're sure they're at Rutgers?
Ace Bailey.
I think we're going to probably. I don't see any. Listen, I don't see Ace Bailey at Rutgers.
Well, maybe I've got his name wrong.
They've got a kid named Bruce Thornton, who's their leading scorer. Then they've got Devin Royal.
Maybe Bailey hasn't played yet. That could be something. And Dylan Harper.
And Dylan Harper. I see neither in their any of their stats.
Well, he's played. Dylan Harper's played 9 games.
At Rutgers.
Yeah, what were you looking at?
I was looking at Ohio State.
Oh, okay, well, that's a problem.
Well, thank goodness that saved you from the kind of humiliation I just felt.
Yeah, I know what I'm talking about occasionally.
Well, they're still 5-4.
Harper's averaging well over 20 points per game.
Well, why aren't they better?
I don't know.
That's my concern.
Can't answer that. He's averaging 23.3. Bailey, believe it or not, and I'm going to look up his stats right now, he's averaging 18 a game.
So there's 41.
Well, those are obviously good players. They may not have anything else around them.
Not much.
They started the season with 4 wins. Then they lost to Kennesaw State, beat an okay Notre Dame team in overtime, and have lost 3 straight to Alabama by only 5, Texas A&M by only 4, and then to Ohio State. So they're better than I gave them credit for. They've been in games against ranked teams.
They'll figure it out.
Maybe. Certainly got a chance.
And if they don't, oh well.
I follow the baseball winter meetings with interest. But all people ever talk about are the Yankees, Mets, Dodgers.
They're the ones making the most moves.
Phillies. The haves and the have-nots are getting more widely separated.
Guards lost Alex Cobb today, which I don't know if
Where'd he go?
Detroit.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, can you believe it? Division rival now.
Well, that can't be sitting well with you.
Yeah, I don't think we'll miss him. He made like 4 starts, and 2 of them sucked.
Yeah, but just the idea of a guy going to your division rival.
Yeah, but we got a chance to hit him around a little bit. I got no love lost for Alex Cobb.
That has to irritate you a little bit. I keep waiting for the Cardinals to make a move. Now they talk like they want to keep Ryan Helsley, which I don't get.
It doesn't make sense.
He'll never be more desirable for other teams.
I agree.
I don't get it.
I don't know.
They just keep throwing. The Cardinals are in this mode where they just keep trying to pull the wool over the eyes of their fans. And I'll be so glad when John Mozeliak is gone.
Can you build a decent bullpen? Give your offense a little bit more of a chance?
I don't care about
this
year.
Run prevention? Well, that's what the Guardians thought, too.
We're trying to revamp. That's what I thought.
But if you can...
I thought this was a revamp year.
Maybe not.
Ryan Helsley's a free agent after this year. Why try to keep him?
I don't know.
I don't get it. Eric Fetty, free agent. Why keep him? You can get something for Eric Fetty. If you look at his numbers and how he ranked among starters in baseball this year, that guy's worth something.
You think they plan to keep him?
I hope not.
I'd like a chance at Eric Fetty, if you don't mind.
But you don't have anybody we want.
We don't? 5 top 100 prospects?
Well, we'll take one of them.
Nah, probably not. Doesn't seem feasible.
You can't keep Nolan Arenado. He doesn't want to be there. There's no sense in keeping him there.
Well, no one wants him, though.
Because of his contract. So you become creative. The goal is to only pay a portion of that contract and not worry too much about what you get in return.
Yeah, but you're going to have to take back a pretty significant contract.
No, you don't want to do that.
There's no one that's going to pay most of Nolan Arenado's contract.
You pay half of what he's owed, and you get it off the books. So he's owed $70 million over the next 3 years. If you make the other team pay $40 million of that over 3 years, then suddenly he becomes a fairly attractive piece.
Do you want to be paying Nolan Arenado $13 million?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Only 34. He didn't have a very good year last year, but he was a Gold Glove finalist.
He's declining offensively a lot.
He doesn't have to decline. You get him in a spot where he wants to be.
And where would that be?
He can't hit home runs in St. Louis.
Well, he's not going to be able to hit them in like San Francisco. I don't know where else.
He wants to be in L.A. Trade him to the Dodgers. The Dodgers don't care about money.
But they don't need Nolan Arenado either.
They don't. They could use Nolan Arenado. He's a little better than Max Muncy at third base.
I don't know that they'd
then
share that
Max
opinion.
Max Muncy to second. That's where he's better anyway.
I don't know. Maybe. Didn't they sign somebody to play second?
No. They signed Conforto.
Yeah, they've signed a bunch of guys.
They didn't sign anybody to play second.
Well, they talked about
Gavin Lux becomes a trade piece.
Yeah, they talked about moving Betts back to the outfield. Gavin Lux second.
No, they talked about moving Betts to the infield.
Because they got Tommy Edman?
No, because Edman can play the outfield, center field.
That's what I'm saying.
Betts isn't a center fielder.
I know. He's a right fielder.
So, yeah, they would still want to bring Teoscar Hernandez back. That would give them an outfield of Conforto, Edman, and Teoscar Hernandez, an infield of Muncy, Betts.
Rojas and Freeman.
I don't know if I thought Rojas was gone.
He's still there as far as I know.
Well, Lux would beat out Rojas.
They like Rojas. He's good defensively.
They can like Rojas all they want.
I don't think they like Lux.
He's not going to play ahead of Lux. That's my point.
We'll see.
So I'm looking for something to happen that pertains to the team I follow. And I'll be very distraught if nothing does.
I understand. I've been there.
I want to see this revamp. I like that word better than rebuild or renovate or... We're going to revamp.
It doesn't happen like you think it's going to happen, though. I've been part of multiple revamps, and I don't know if that's necessarily what you want.
No, the Cardinals will do it differently.
How so?
This is a one-year revamp.
Then what are they going to do next year?
Then they start to try to win again.
They might. Okay, I guess.
They get some of these clowns off the payroll, like Steven Matz and Miles Michaelis. Guys you can't do anything with.
I'm with you. They're the ones who, you have a new regime coming in, so you won't be relying on the same guys that signed
right.
those terrible contracts.
I trust
and offered.
This new regime until they give me a reason not to.
Shouldn't it be the opposite?
But right now... From what I can see and what I read, they're revamping their farm system to the point where I think it's going to be a real positive.
I hope it works out
for
you.
They're bringing guys in from the Dodgers, from the Guardians. We basically raided your team.
As you should. Pretty good organization we've had for well over two decades.
Well, you've had a good run.
Sure have.
You see how long it can continue.
I don't see any reason for it to stop.
Well, I don't know if it'll stop or not.
I do. That mean anything to
Might
you?
Might be over this year. You got the Bengals and the Cowboys tonight, Monday Night Football, no interest. Neither team's going to get into the playoffs.
No fantasy
Although
implications
both teams,
for you?
I beat Duda. Because of one reason.
He rested all his guys?
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen's pretty impressive.
Oh, my God. Yesterday's really the first time I've kind of had my phone on that, whatever app that is that keeps track of our fantasy.
Sleeper.
While I'm watching the game. And right. It's like a pinball machine. Josh Allen's just putting up points like...
How many did he end up with? Like 70?
55.
That's it?
Well, that's a lot. That's
it
more
is,
than I've ever
it
seen
seems
anybody
like it should
get.
Be more than that.
He had 5 touchdowns.
Thought he had 6.
But the Rams beat the Bills because the Rams, boy, they are scary. Their receivers are good. And Matthew Stafford is an A-list quarterback.
Hall of Famer?
Yes.
I have to think about it.
No, I don't think there's any doubt.
He did a lot of losing early on in his career.
That's because the Lions never put anything around him. Except Calvin Johnson for a while.
Yeah, one of the best ever.
But you know what I'm saying.
I get it.
I think he's really good, and watching those two guys yesterday was fun. That kind of football is highly enjoyable, even though neither defense can figure it out at all.
We don't need defense.
And it wasn't because the defense was bad. It was because the offenses were good. They were both making pinpoint throws. Receivers were making great catches. Running game had very little to do with anything, although the Rams got some.
Kyren Williams did okay.
Yeah, he did fine, especially in the first half.
Matthew Stafford's 105, 113, and 1 in his career, which, you know, he's closing in on 60,000 yards, which is obviously great. 376 touchdowns. I don't know, probably a Hall of Famer.
No, he's not probably a Hall of Famer.
A losing record, though?
He's a Hall of Famer.
I don't know, man, losing record?
Kurt Warner's record.
Kurt Warner has a winning record.
Well, thanks to his years in with the Rams.
And then he did a good job with Arizona later on in his career. 67 and 49.
Yeah. I bet you can. What's Eli Manning's record?
You think he has a losing record?
Well, he's not
a Hall of Famer either, I don't
think. He will be.
You think?
Yes.
Huh.
2 Super Bowls?
He was 117 and 117. Right down the middle. Don't you want more winning out of your Hall of Famers?
I want Super Bowl rings. Well, football's a different animal.
Was winning 2 of those when you were mediocre the rest of your career?
Yeah, football, like I said, football's a different animal. We don't necessarily judge it the way we do baseball or other.
Well, it's not even close.
If you can get to the promised land in football and you're a quarterback and you've done it multiple times, you're in.
Didn't Kenny Stabler, one of those guys, not in?
Huh?
Isn't one of those Raiders guys who won 2 not in? Is it
Daryl LaMonica?
Is that who it is?
Look it up. Don't ask me.
Thought it was Stabler.
I'm just here to
think about LaMonica. Stabler's in.
Yeah, I think LaMonica. I don't think he's in. If I had to wager.
What do you think about the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Is he in?
Stabler?
LaMonica.
I wasn't looking at him. I don't know.
Well, you said, isn't there a Raiders quarterback?
Yeah, but who's the other guy that's not Stabler?
Jim Plunkett.
Yeah, he's not in.
That's 3 pretty good quarterbacks.
LaMonica's not in.
Well,
Stabler,
there you go.
Not in as a 2-time, and he was a Super Bowl MVP. But not in.
Wish I had a quarterback like that with the Raiders
also,
now.
He also a 500 quarterback at 72 and 70.
Who's that?
Plunkett. So there's a test case for you.
Yeah, I like Plunkett.
He's fine.
Where did he play college football?
Pitt.
Wrong.
Stanford. That's
pretty
good.
You missed it. No, it's not good.
I got it on the second turn.
You missed it.
Second try's not bad.
What was I? I had something I wanted to say.
I was going
to
ask you about the Hall of Fame in baseball, the announcement.
Well, I'm very happy for Dick Allen and Dave Parker.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I have people online saying, why'd Parker get in? He belongs with Harold Baines. What?
He kind of does.
Are you?
I love Dave Parker, but
look at his numbers.
Look at Baines' numbers. They have, like, he has more home runs. But Baines has a ton of hits, and for some reason, these Veterans Committee guys, Ozzie Smith was on the committee, Paul Molitor. There were some interesting names. Tony Perez was on the committee. And they like to put in guys with a lot of hits.
Dave Parker had 2,712 hits.
It's a lot.
Almost 1,500 RBIs.
Plus, he was a good defensive player.
He had a good arm.
He was a good defensive player.
He lumbered around out there a little bit.
He wasn't the world's fastest guy, but he had 7 years where he stole double-digit bases. He was an MVP. I like his resume.
It's okay.
And Dick Allen's a no-brainer.
Should be.
And I feel bad that Ken Boyer didn't get in.
Well, how many ballots do you need to be on before it's clear that you're not a Hall of Famer?
Ken Boyer was better than Steve Garvey.
Well, the ballot was terrible. Do we really need Steve? I mean, how many times do you have to vote no on Steve Garvey?
I love Kenny Boyer. Do you know that that's one of my guys? Let's take a break. Paul Mills, Wichita State basketball, joins us next. Shockers with a little time off before a road game coming up at DePaul this weekend. Stay with us.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
Paul Mills joins us, Wichita State basketball coach, coming off a 96-87 win over East Tennessee State on Saturday. Welcome, Paul. How's it going?
All good on this thing. Good to be here.
Thank you. I would imagine you had a good time watching that game from the bench, coaching that game, and then looking at the box score. This is kind of, I would guess, how you want the Shockers to play every game. Lots of balance in the scoring. A lot of people scored. Everybody contributed in the rebounding area. Lots of assists. Not a lot of turnovers. Pretty good performance.
Yeah, I don't think that a coach is actually ever happy. I mean, you know, you're always thinking about the areas that you could do better. You know, we need to do a much better job defensively than what we did on Saturday night, but there was some pluses. You understand that no player, no team is ever going to play a perfect game, but I'm glad we still have 4 months left in this season because we've got a lot of work to do.
How much are you willing, I guess, to sacrifice defensively to be comfortable playing at a pace like that and doing well in transition and getting quick shots that are good shots and shooting the three well? Is that a fair trade-off to you?
Well, I think that you're paying attention to shot quality. I mean, I think shot selection is probably the number one thing that coaches are responsible for. And, you know, it's not necessarily that they fall because all shots don't do that. We just have to make sure that we're taking the right ones. From the premise of your question, I don't think the two are mutually exclusive. I don't think you have to play fast and then sacrifice offense, their good offense, because you're not doing something right defensively. I do think that you can get back, you know, to the point that philosophically that we approach it, we are going to give up some offensive rebounds in order to make sure that we have enough people back defensively. So the trade-off of old boards versus giving up anything defensive transition is one of those trade-offs that we make. And we have work to do in that area. But for the most part, if you can make sure that your shot quality and what you're paying attention to is differentials, and you have to pay attention to the differentials. Hey, we gave up this many in transition, but we scored this much. And there is a number that you have to be comfortable with, but I honestly don't believe that the two are mutually exclusive in order to get quality shots. You may have to be behind a little bit defensively on account of the pace of the game.
Paul Mills is our guest, Wichita State men's head basketball coach. Shockers idle here for a little bit until they go to Chicago
to face DePaul on Saturday. So you've rolled along here pretty well. You're 8-1, and you had that 12 to 15 minute stretch against Florida that we really haven't talked about. What happened, and how meaningful was it? How meaningful is it? How have you been able to build off of that? What's been the fallout of that, not only loss to Florida, but that 27-0 run that the Gators had?
One, Florida's really good, so I don't want to in any way, shape, or form say that they're not. They are a really good basketball team, and we tried to match their two bigs. I mean, it's 21-18 with 17 to play. We played our two bigs, Quincy Ballard and Mate, and we've never practiced that before. Corey Washington was in foul trouble. We thought that Corey's backup, Joy, was just too inexperienced to be playing in a game like that, and went to something that really, you know, I know it was game seven at the time. Really, at that particular time, we just hadn't put a lot of time in. And you could see how clunky we were offensively. From a schematic standpoint, I think if you look at it defensively, that was actually the only lineup that held them under a 1 point per possession. It was the offense. And so from an offensive standpoint, there was just no flow. So when you have 18 straight possessions, and if you look, the possession that we score, we bring back Mate in and go into an interior play in order to get a bucket to kind of break it. But I think it's one of those things that you're extremely happy that you play those kind of games, because you need to get exposed in some areas. You're by no way are you going to get your best in November, and you need to play those kind of games in order to figure out, like, this may be a hole, or this is something that we really need to address. And obviously losing Ronnie DeGray, we never anticipated really being in a situation where Mate and Quincy – well, Mate was having to play the four, Quincy the five, but that was 100% Paul Mills' fault, and Paul Mills needs to do a better job preparing his team for those kind of scenarios. It was never a scenario that we really envisioned until about 2 weeks ago after Ronnie got hurt.
So when you have as many seniors as you have on your team, and when many of them have played elsewhere, is it a challenge when they come in to not have preconceived notions about what they can be, to try to develop them even farther? Maybe they haven't yet reached their ceiling, even though they have experience. So just as an example, I don't know if this is how it went or not, but when you see Justin Hill on tape with Georgia, do you look at him and say, he can be exactly that for us? Or do you look at him and say, oh, he's got this set of skills, we can use him in these other ways too? How does that really work?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, one, he brings a lot to the table. I mean, he was third in the SEC in assist rate, and you knew of his ability to really pass. You knew of his ability to make open shots. I mean, if you look at it right now, he's a 3-to-1 assist-to-turnover guy. We needed ball security and needed to be able to bring additional backcourt players in to help us provide ball security, given where we were. And it's translated pretty well. I mean, we're top 15 in the country right now. We're sitting at 13th compared to 228th a year ago. So, I mean, that right there is a jump of, you know, a good 215 points just to where you need to be. So, well, you do think that you can utilize him in a different way, specifically for us. I mean, we were number two in the country last year in ball screen frequency. So we just thought that, man, the way that we play, the style at which we play, how much we utilize pick and roll, we think that he would be a huge asset here and be able to utilize him better with the players that we have. Obviously, Quincy Ballard is such a vertical threat that people have to pay attention to that specific role, man, when he's putting that much pressure on the rim, which would free your ball handler up. And we knew he had the ability to go and finish around the rim. So absolutely, I think you think that with all of your players. I would be a little disappointed if they came in with preconceived notions of thinking this is one how it's going to be, because your focus needs to be on getting better. And, you know, whether you're the worst player in the gym, whether you're the best player in the gym, you need to have the same mindset, and that's, I need to come out here and get better. And you definitely don't want players who think they're near their ceiling, or this is how you need to utilize me. They obviously have a skill set that we want to take advantage of. But I think the question regarding Justin Hill, the answer is both.
Final moments here with Paul Mills, who's gracious enough to join us to talk Shocker basketball. So the crowds have been slow to return. You inherited a program that had lost some of the passion from its fan base. There's no secret about that. In your estimation, Paul, what's it going to take to get that passion back so that Coke Arena is rocking the way it did in the mid-2010s and earlier than that? Is it a matter of just one loss record? Is it a matter of beating the right teams? Is it a matter of getting to the NCAA tournament? What is all of that?
Man, you probably have better answers than I do, but I am reminded of Truett Cathy, the owner of Chick-fil-A, when his staff came to him and was asking, who will be the first to $1 billion, us or Boston Market? And he said, guys, we're worried about the wrong things. He's like, if we get better, the market will demand that we get bigger. And you can't go anywhere nowadays without seeing a Chick-fil-A. And that's kind of my approach. Like, you know what my job is, what our job is as a team? It's to get better. And I think people want to see representation on the court. They want to see teams that are about doing the right things. And I do believe that if we get better, the market will demand that that Coke gets bigger and more people show up to the roundhouse. So I think that's our focus. We could probably spend a lot of time passing out pizza and doing things, and not to discredit any of those things because I've done them in order to get fans to the game. But we need to get better as a basketball team. And I think Wichita has a rich tradition. There's a passionate fan base. And I do believe that the better and better the Shockers get, the more competitive we get, people will show up and support. It's what people in Wichita do.
It's a pretty good answer, I got to admit. And I do miss Boston Market.
That was a good place.
I'll say that right now.
I haven't even seen one in a long time.
I know. Paul, we really appreciate your time. Best of luck as the season continues. And good luck in Chicago against an interesting DePaul team.
Yeah, gentlemen, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Paul Mills, Wichita State basketball. Interesting answer to that question. You can tell he's been asked many times before.
Yeah, that's all he can do, right?
That's
all he's in charge of.
It's a challenge. Because this team, while I think it's pretty good, I do. I said at the time, you just kind of throw that Florida game out. There's really, they had a bad stretch of minutes. They got in over their head and couldn't figure it out. I think this team's pretty good, but when are fans gonna come back?
Still want to see more.
That's the open question.
Still want to see more out of the league. 2-9 over the weekend, with the other win was UAB over Prairie View. Memphis lost to Arkansas State. It's just
not a good loss.
I want more.
We all want more. 869-1240, that's the IHOP hotline. The breakfast partner of Xbox, IHOP. Their decadent French toast available to all of you. What else happened in the NFL over the weekend that caught your interest?
I don't know.
Ready for the playoffs, aren't we?
The Rams and Lions, I watched that one. What was the early game?
The Rams didn't play.
Rams and Bills, sorry. What was the early game?
I don't remember.
I don't think I watched the early game because I was watching KU. I watched all these games, and we haven't talked about any games. This is why I don't watch games.
Well, KU, Missouri.
I watched K-State. I watched WSU. I watched KU.
Why did you watch K-State?
I hadn't seen them before. They were terrible in the second half.
Blown out at St. John's.
They were good in the first half, terrible in the second.
It's good to have St. John's back as a viable member of the college basketball world.
Yeah, it's okay.
Rick Pitino.
He is
paying homage to Lou Carnesecca with the sweater.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Thinking about going to Raw tonight, but just this ticket situation's not going too well for me.
Just by yourself?
No, with my wife.
Really?
Yeah.
Monday Night Raw here. Wonder what the guys are doing right now. They're probably at the arena chilling out or at their hotel, aren't they?
Yeah, they're probably at the arena. Show starts in 2.5 hours.
Starts at 7.
3 hours for the actual television show, but dark matches and such.
What's the ticket situation?
$70 for two tickets?
Please tell me. Good seats?
They're pretty good. $28 for fulfillment and service fee for two $18 tickets. What is that?
That's how they get you.
It is how they get you. It's awful.
Just watch it on television.
I want to go see Kof.
Oh, God.
My boy, Kof.
You know, a 41-year-old man really shouldn't idolize.
We had Drew McIntyre at the station today.
Well, did you talk to him?
No.
Or did you go cower in the corner again?
I was trying to go see his segment because we had it scheduled for 7:45. So I went down there at 7:45 and he was done. It was already over. He was taking pictures with some of our people.
Well, did you go get a picture?
Of course
taken?
Not.
Why?
Because I'm not that guy.
But yet you're the guy that I want to see Kof.
Yeah, I do want to see Kof. I'd probably take a picture with Kof. Kofi Kingston.
What was Drew McIntyre like? What did he have to say?
He was good. He was good. I watched the segment later on. It was fantastic. He's good at that
in
sort
character?
Of stuff. Mostly, yeah.
Yeah.
He's gonna crack some skulls tonight.
More and more they're in character on their media interviews.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Used to not be so much.
Well, we've had a little bit of both. We've interviewed Drew McIntyre.
What's the main event tonight?
I don't think it's been announced yet.
What could it potentially be?
Is Gunther and Finn Balor?
Is
that the match tonight? It might be.
I don't know. They're so focused now on getting on Netflix that...
Well, they're not phoning it in.
Huh?
They're not phoning it in late in the year.
No, but we'll see what happens.
Seeing if we got a Raw card. Here we go. Raquel Rodriguez versus Rhea Ripley. We got a women's intercontinental tournament match.
Who's that?
Lyra Valkyria, Zelina Vega, and Ivy Nile. Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods speak. Seth Rollins appears. And we have the, what are they called? The Wyatt Six.
Oh, yeah.
Against those other guys.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, that'll be a good one.
You know, people in town are running into those people.
They are?
Sure, they're out for lunch. And
well, have you seen any proof of this?
No, I haven't.
I'd like to see some of that.
I know back in the day, these guys used to go out and have a few cocktails after the show. I don't know if they still do that or not, nor do I know where they'd go.
I don't know. I wonder where they have to be later this week. They don't do as many house shows, live events.
I don't know where they'd go.
I think their schedule's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
They'd probably go somewhere old town, I guess.
Perhaps, if they decide to stay in town. They probably all want to get home, though.
Well, they can't fly out of here till tomorrow.
Is that right? We don't have red eyes?
No. It'd be awesome if they went to the Shamrock or somewhere like that.
I'll go out and look for them for you.
I just hope they have a good crowd.
They will have a great crowd. Tickets are hard to come by. Like on the Selecta seat, you can't find any. But you got to go to the StubHub and whatnot.
Well, you're not going to pay 70 per, are you?
It's 70 for two.
You're not going to do that, are you?
I don't know. I'll ask my wife what she thinks.
You think she wants to?
I think she would. I don't know if she wants
to.
I told her I wanted to see Kofi, and she's like, well, should we just go see Kofi and then leave? So I don't think she wants to.
It's kind of sad that she's That's the response you'd give your 11-year-old.
No, she's great.
No, it really is. Well, can we go see Kofi and leave?
No, that's what she said. I don't want
to.
Yeah,
but that's what a mom. That's what a mom would say to an 11-year-old.
Well, that's basically what we're doing.
You're the 11-year-old.
Well, I'm a guy going to watch pro wrestling. I might as well be 11 in that case.
Why didn't your friend Scotty Griffiths go with you?
I don't know that he's shown any interest in going.
Is he starting to detach a little from
starting
from pro wrestling?
I don't know what his pro wrestling viewpoints are.
That's disappointing.
I don't hear from Scotty very much.
That's very disappointing.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Scott, if you're listening, not good.
Yeah, I agree. Keep us posted.
Because I can't keep you as my expert.
I've always known more than Scotty. But
you're not going to...
You'll never take me seriously, and that's okay.
If you're not going to delve in. It's important to delve in. We'll also have a game tomorrow.
Am I on the show tomorrow?
Yes. Aren't you?
You told me.
Did you ask for Tuesday off?
Yeah. But I can come if you need me.
It's up to you.
All right.
You figure it out. I've got Duda coming. We went to the house yesterday and picked up some mints for my wife's Christmas party.
What house?
That Avery made.
Nice.
And Dia brought us a nice tin of Chex Mix.
How's that going?
Said that she heard you ate most of the good stuff, so she felt compelled to make some more for us.
Well, that was sweet of her.
It is. We both remarked how great she is, and how Jason is, just okay.
Jason's wonderful.
Tell me what's wonderful.
I don't know.
He's a great guy, but is he wonderful?
He's fine. We're all just okay.
We're just doing our best. All right. I think that's about it for... Boy, we can't get that music playing. There it is. Max, right on it, Max. Thanks for listening, everyone. By the way, Duda with 40 points in fantasy. I'm sorry, in our...
I mean, I have.
32.
Not bad.
You guys were good this week. You got your... Boy, when you picked that bonus game for 10...
Sure helps.
Just think, if you'd both miss that, you would have had
12, and he'd have 12. 20.
I mean, yeah.
Thank goodness.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.